Madam Chair.
We're on. Let's go.
Senator Vickerman and I will pass it. Of course, we'll change that one back to Morris, you understand?
Senate Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Budget Division will come to order. Welcome, everyone. I know there's a great deal of interest in this bill, and I'm glad to see it. The spreadsheet is being passed out right now, so you can fill in those blanks. For those who haven't gotten copies of the bill yet, we've got them up on the table. I'm just going to go through and explain the bill and take questions from members at that. And I should announce, I think Don probably already mentioned this, Don Jurofsky, that we do have a lot of public testimony scheduled, and we are running late. So we may ask those who can easily come back next week to do that, but we're going to definitely take people from out of town today. As time permits, we'll go as far as we can. So maybe I'll wait till people have the spreadsheet, and then I can go through that. Yeah, why don't you go help pass them out so that people get them quickly? Yeah, Alec shouldn't have to. Yeah, help Alec. Let's get them to everybody so they can go through it with me. All right, I'm going to start by going through the spreadsheet, which you will have in your hands in just a moment, members of the public. And I'll just start by describing this. We have one column that says the OES recommendations based on their initial report to the federal government. On the right column, you'll see Senate File 657, the Senate proposal. And the first number that you'll see, we'll go through the Senate numbers here on the right column. The first number that you'll see is the weatherization dollars, $131,937,000. We are not recommending any particular allocations to that number, but we expect that we do have some language relating to that. The next two numbers that you'll see in the right-hand column are the block grant numbers, the energy assistance block grants, and the state are $6.386 million and $4.258 million. And those numbers, as you know, are the block grants to cities and local and cities and counties that pass through Commerce, and those are for the purpose of energy efficiency. The remainder of the numbers you'll see here are from the state energy program, and it's about $54 million total. And so that's the allocation that I think is of most interest and is mostly directed in this bill. So I'll go through those numbers. But I want to say just by way of summary that out of that $54 million, I got a pen. Out of the $54 million, what we did was approximately divide about two-thirds of it to energy efficiency programs and about one-third to renewable energy programs. And we also tried, we had a lot of great proposals and a lot of great ideas and a lot of bills, and we tried for the most part to make these statewide programs, and there's a few exceptions and a couple of demonstration projects and key things that we're funding, but for the most part these are statewide dollars. Continuing down the right-hand column, we're putting $13 million into the weatherization or the retrofits for public buildings, including schools, local governments, and state buildings. So that's a total of $13 million, but you add on to that the block grant dollars, so it's actually significantly more because the $4.258 million will also be used for that purpose. For residential energy financing, we're recommending a total of $15 million, and we are carving out $1.5 million for a pilot program in Duluth that will focus on some really innovative outcomes that I'll talk about when we get to that bill language. For the commercial industrial program for energy efficiency improvements through a revolving loan program for commercial industrial facilities, and this is based on the St. Paul Port Authority's proposal, but we've also made those dollars available statewide for grants to different entities, including the St. Paul Port Authority. That's $7 million. And so those are the energy efficiency programs. Then the renewable energy programs, we have $10 million for local governments and schools to do renewable energy projects, and those include wind, solar, and geothermal. And this is a grant program. I'll describe that in more detail in the bill. We have a small set aside for the Go Green Business Center in Kennedy for $100,000, $250,000, and this is basically Senator Scogin's proposal for very small renewable energy facilities and for grants for those programs for small wind turbines or solar or other small renewable projects, including things like anaerobic digestion or biomass gasification projects. So that would fund about 100 grants around the state for small renewable energy projects that individuals could participate in. The Clean Energy Resource Team's proposal is $1 million, and that's for outreach around the state to reach 2% of Minnesota households with a message letting people know about all of the opportunities that we are creating in this stimulus bill and encouraging outreach for that. And we set it up so that the CERTS teams will do this working closely with the HIRE Coalition and broad community outreach into disadvantaged communities as well. The solar energy program and outreach is we're proposing $7 million for solar, and we put $3 million of that into the Central Corridor Project to do a real demonstration of intensive solar installations, and then the other $4 million would be statewide. Then under applied research certification and technology transfer, what we're proposing in this bill is to take the three different projects for labs and certification facilities, and we put them on a list. And at this point, the bill would put them together and ask the Commerce Department to try to evaluate those. One would be the Solar Certification Lab, which would be located at St. Paul and Morris campuses of the U of M. One would be the eReady proposal at Mankato State to test and transfer technology from Sweden, like residential biomass technology. And the third would be an energy efficiency testing facility and technology transfer center. And so we just put those together into one grant proposal. That is the extent of our dollar recommendations out of the state energy program. I should mention that in terms of training, we're expecting, because the weatherization dollars allow for $20 million to be used for training, that we didn't feel we needed a set-aside for training in addition. Oh, they're shaking their heads. It allows for a significant amount of money for training. Okay, now they're sort of nodding from Commerce. Okay, sorry, I got the number wrong. Anyway, we didn't set aside specific money for training or information or for the other grants that are proposed. So let me go through the bill language. I guess I need my glasses. Okay, if you jump ahead to page 2, we have a lot of this language is familiar from Senate File 657. We have added some things to it, specifically 2.9. We clarify that weatherization programs can include homeless shelters, that rental units, of course, shall be emphasized. We already had that. And also including solar heat for low-income housing. And the strategies, different strategies for weatherization are included here as in the original bill for neighborhood saturation, a quick fix component, and then deeper weatherization improvements. On page 3, on the top of page 3, we ask the Office of Energy Security to apply for a waiver so that we can use weatherization dollars for foreclosed vacant homes so that those homes can be improved as long as an eligible person would move into them and occupy them. And that will really help a lot of communities and neighborhoods that have vacant foreclosed homes that need improvements to make them sellable and help those residents who buy them. Moving down 3.16, the state energy program, we start out with the residential energy program. And basically this sets up in conjunction with the Housing Finance Agency, the option of loans or rebates and buying down the cost of these improvements for homeowners who want to do energy improvements. And the stimulus funds can cover up to 25% of the total project cost. We mention on page 3 specifically window replacement, and we wanted to emphasize that windows could be an eligible use and that we're hoping that we will inspire a lot of window activity in Minnesota and have some more ripple effect of job creation in our window industries as well. In the next, on the next page, page 4.9, this is the Duluth Residential Efficiency Program that comes from Senator Pretner Solon's bill, and I mentioned that we're proposing a carve-out of some money for this to help them. They have an innovative proposal to reach out to their whole community in a comprehensive way, and we added some language to specifically require them to work on innovative financing mechanisms. And I want to see a program in Minnesota that looks at ways to use energy savings to pay back residential retrofits so that it makes it easier for people to access and those improvements without having to go to the bank and take out a loan. So they're looking at some creative ways to do that. And we also require them to come back with an evaluation of the results to see if we can actually achieve more energy savings and deeper, broader results with this program. Page 5, the School District and Local Government Renewable Energy Grant Program. I should mention lines 5.6 to 5.16. We put in some language here that this is a work in progress, and we're going to continue to tweak this language in cooperation with the utilities and the wind industry. But the idea here is to require that whenever a new big wind project is going up, that the developer or the utility, excuse me, should just get on the phone and call up the local school districts and the local government and say, hey, we're putting up a big wind farm. Do you guys have any interest in participating? And we're not requiring them to work together and put a project together, nothing of the sort. We're requiring them basically to make a phone call. And we think that this will set up the possibility of a lot of cooperation and the ability of local governments and schools to work together to try to be part of some of these wind projects by taking advantage of some of the funding opportunities we have here and taking advantage of the expertise and the economies of scale that are already going into these wind projects. 5.17 is the grant to the Go Green Business Center in Senator Stumpf's area of the state. 5.22 is the small grants for renewable energy facilities, and this includes, if you turn to page 6, as I mentioned, biomass gasification and some other biofuels-related or bioaerobic digesters and biomass gasification, as well as other renewable energy projects. And there's a cap on these grants of either 2,500 or 35% of the cost, whichever is lower. As I said, that will allow roughly 100 people around the state to get low-cost renewable energy projects built. 6.16 is the Commercial Industrial Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Program based on the St. Paul Port Authority's proposal. We also added some language, 6.29 to 6.35, and this is from Senator Kubley's bill that allows another use of this is for particularly for biofuel facilities like an ethanol plant that wanted to make energy efficiency improvements or to replace their fossil fuel use with a renewable fuel use. Turning to page 7, line 24, this is the CERTS grant to do the statewide door-to-door campaign to identify 2% of homeowners who are interested in energy efficiency and renewable energy projects. And they have to work with the coalition that's defined here, which is the HIRE coalition, which is a very broad-based coalition of more than 70 community organizations reaching out across from a number of religious groups, the Catholic Charities and Lutheran Coalition for Public Policy, to community organizations, to neighborhood organizations. And they will work with CERTS to make sure that we do outreach broadly and deeply in Minnesota communities, especially in disadvantaged communities. They'll have an opportunity to really get the word out. And to utilize youth and seniors, and we talked about in some communities, maybe some retired seniors or out-of-work folks who are from those communities are the best people to deliver this message. So this is intended to be a really community-based program. page 8.6, we start the solar program here, and I already mentioned this is the St. Paul Minneapolis Light Rail Corridor project for concentrated solar installation, as well as solar projects around the whole state. So we have a big emphasis on trying to grow solar in Minnesota with this bill. And we have some requirements for licensed electricians to install those solar projects. Sorry, I need to wet my whistle here for a second. Okay, I'm good. Juice. I've already explained this whole thing to all the committee members, so I've repeated this quite a few times today. Losing my voice already. No, thanks. Page 9, we've got the energy efficiency in public buildings, and then the three grant programs that I mentioned for the three different facilities for testing and certification. Page 10 is the block grants to cities and counties for energy efficiency. Bottom of page 10, subdivision 5. We're proposing, under administrative costs, we're proposing a cap of 5% of administrative costs to Commerce. We'll have to talk with them about this, but it seems to me that that should be more than adequate to increase their personnel that they need and the work that they'll need to do to get this job done. And page 11 authorizes them to hire personnel and indicates, you know, their administration activities will include reporting requirements, training, and education. We're asking them to do a hotline and a website to provide more public information. And 11.19, to broadly disseminate information about the opportunities to participate in the energy savings and renewable, but also to participate in the job opportunities that will be created from this. And sorry, my voice is getting squeaky. And again, we emphasize that we want them to reach deeply into communities and make sure they get into all communities around the state and disadvantaged communities in particular. We've got some responsible bidder language on the bottom of page 11. Page 12 is the School District and Local Government Renewable Energy Grant Program. And I'll just point out changes from the bill as we saw it last. The only changes really are on page 13, where we set up some limits for the grants, and otherwise it's the bill that we already heard in the committee for grants for wind, solar, or geothermal to schools and local governments, and there's criteria here that require it to be a cost-effective project to be geographically distributed, that if a school district is doing one of these projects, they have to integrate that into their educational programs. We have a Minnesota product preference for the turbines and solar panels and other products being bought. And then the grant terms, we set a limit of 20% for wind projects and 50% for solar projects of the total project cost. And Senator Kubley has suggested perhaps for the smaller wind projects, we might need a higher cap. So this was intended to be a cap for the large-scale, utility-scale turbines, that 20% of the project should be adequate to really make a difference. Local government and school district building renovations and state government buildings are on pages 13 and 14. And I think the only change to this, well, there's a couple changes to this language from what we had in committee before. One is that on 13.21, and again in the next section, we prioritize high energy users. So this is about really focusing on the energy hogs. And just to remind people that we've done a state audit of public buildings. We know what their energy usage is. And so these are projects ready to go and will save an enormous amount of energy for public buildings. And that will result in dollars to our classrooms, to our local governments, to our state agencies, savings in operating dollars, but also energy savings. And a lot of jobs will be required to do these projects. And again, as this was drafted, up to 25% of the project cost could go up front to get these projects going. And that's what the stimulus dollars would cover. Section 7 appliance replacement, and we're expecting another federal stimulus grant for appliance rebates. Section 8, training and workforce development, basically just guides commerce in their training activities that they'll be funding, and requires that we focus on existing training programs to the maximum extent possible, whether they're through CAPS or unions or MNSCU, and that we target communities with high rates of unemployment or other disadvantaged communities in terms of training opportunities. Section 9, we want the Office of Energy Security to have technical expertise and personnel devoted to helping small communities around the state who might not have staff on hand to help with different programs to maximize those smaller cities' ability to utilize these funds. Sections 10 and 13 are both asking Commerce to apply for other funds through the stimulus plans, competitive funds, as well as smart grid type proposals. Section 11 just requires working with the utilities on their SIP programs. And Section 12, accountability and transparency, just lays out some details about the reporting that we would like to have back from those projects funded, from the state agencies and from the funded projects, in terms of how much energy are we saving, how many jobs are being created, and then within that, more detailed data so we can see if it's we're getting good results for these dollars. And we're asking for an aggressive reporting back on every 3 months so that we can stay on top of this in the short timeline that we have to put all this money to work. That's the bill, and it's all effective immediately. So I would ask if any committee members have questions or comments. Senator Chaudhry.
Madam Chair, I don't have a question. But I have
Senator Vickerman.
I have a comment. I want to thank you for all the hard work, because I know this is a lot of work to go through and a few minutes. And as I said earlier, I want it to be fair, and I want it to be equal around the state, and that's the way it looks to me like this. I thank you for that.
Thank you, Senator Vickerman. I really appreciate that. And it has been like putting together a whole budget bill. So it has been a lot of work, and the participation of a lot of people have been required. And I know the staff has been working extremely hard to get this done, and I want to thank them. Also, maybe just another comment I want to make is that, and then I'll call on you, Senator Chaudhry. You know, I think a lot of eyes around the country are looking at Minnesota, and they're expecting really great things from us. It's exciting to have an opportunity to pass a really good bill that's filled with only good things, because we're going to be passing a lot of bills that aren't so filled with good things when we balance our budget this year. It's going to be a very tough year. But this is a bill hopefully everybody can love, because it's all good things and exciting ideas that we're going to be able to fund. So I'm really grateful to have this opportunity. And I do believe I've heard from folks in Washington that they're looking to Minnesota to really show how these green infrastructure dollars can be put to best use, because we're one of the leading states in having the infrastructure in place, the programs in place, the good people at our state agencies, and a lot of partners that are in place to really deliver fast results in creating jobs and reducing energy use, increasing renewable energy, all the goals of the federal stimulus dollars. I think we have an opportunity to really set a great example for the country. So this is a very, very important bill, and I really appreciate everyone's support. Senator Chaudhry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Definitely echo those comments, as well as Senator Vickerman's, on your hard work on this issue. Question I had, as far as the breakdown of dollars in the various forms of renewable energy, can we quantify in this bill how much money is being directed solely towards solar, for example, versus other forms? I know there are a variety of initiatives in here where it's a choice, mm-hmm. and then can we quantify how much is actually being directed towards solar versus other forms of energy?
Well, there's about $10 million that's going to either, to your choice. and there's about $7 million that's going to solar specifically. So there is an emphasis on solar in this bill above other renewable energy sources, and I think that's appropriate at this particular point in time. There's still, I mean, there's an enormous interest in wind around the state and in all forms of renewable energy, and it's a really exciting time for that. And I'm glad to be able to support that. A lot of larger wind projects are harder, are very expensive and capital intensive to install for a small entity. And so I think it's great that we're expanding beyond. I mean, we've talked a lot about wind over the last number of years, and we still have a long ways to go to do as much wind as we can do in Minnesota cost effectively. But I think solar is kind of the next big thing, and we have an opportunity. We have a lot of manufacturers who are already building solar components or want to start building those in Minnesota. The prices are dropping quickly. The capacity, you know, there's a surplus of products right now. It's just I think all the stars are aligning right now to really invest big time in solar. And if we do it now, we can put ourselves in a leadership role. We're already in the fourth biggest in the country in wind. And if we play our cards right, I think we can also do that in solar if we act now. So that's part of what is my motivation.
The reason I ask that, Madam Chair, is because I agree that solar is the next big thing. But the education that I've received on solar technology today is that it doesn't compare in efficiency to some of the other forms that we have. Now, solar is going to be improved very soon, but in terms of the priorities of where we put our dollars today, all of the information I've received regarding solar is that it will not be the most efficient way to put alternative energy dollars. Geothermal. Maybe even some wind, but really geothermal is the number one, and then weatherization, and you can interchange those two. Probably weatherization first. So I'm very much a solar advocate, and that's why I'm raising this question: is do we, if we put an enormous amount of money into a technology that doesn't have the efficiency that it will have soon? Could we be jeopardizing the future of solar by proving it wrong in a stage that it's not, in a stage where it's not quite ideal yet? Photovoltaic is soon going to go to silicon. The battery storage is also a question mark right now. And so the information I've received is that solar is good. I certainly support doing some of that, but the emphasis is something that I have a question about. And so if there's information that I'm not getting or contrary to that, I'd be curious if there is.
Senator Chaudhry, I want to start by saying that, as you said, mentioned weatherization. Energy efficiency is by far the most cost-effective thing we can do with these dollars, and that's why we put two-thirds of the money towards weatherization and efficiency and only one-third towards renewables, because we're going to get by far the biggest bang for our buck there, and we're going to create a lot of jobs in the process. So it's – and help people save energy dollars. So As I said, wind is competitive, solar is a little more expensive, but with all the different pieces that are now available to finance solar, the federal government has made some significant changes just in the last year that remove caps on tax credits for solar installation. If you combine the different opportunities that exist, for the first time, we'll be able to afford to do some solar installations in a way that they haven't been able to, given all the different pieces that we're putting together, including what the utilities are doing, what the feds are doing, and what we'll do in this bill. And so we're putting some options out there that haven't really been cost-effective before, but will be now. And again, it will position ourselves to be leaders in this area. We've spent a lot of time talking about this in the policy committee and on the legislative the electric, what's it called now, the Legislative Energy Commission. We had some really great testimony about solar in the hearing we had a week or so ago that really lays out the economics of solar and the upward trajectory it's on, and I'd be happy to share some of that information with you, Senator Shuffie. Okay. Are there other questions? Yes, Senator Dill.
Madam Chair, did you share with this group the cost of administering these funds?
I did. I mentioned that 5% cap that we had talked about.
Right. Okay, good. Because I think that's a very, very good point here. The federal government is allowing for a 10% administration fee on $200 million. That's $20 million. And you cut it to less than five, no more than five. So that's still $10 million to administer the $200 million worth of. And hopefully they can do it for much less than that.
Madam Chair.
Senator Frederickson.
Madam Chair, in that section, I would like to propose an amendment. Doesn't make a change in the intent, but just more precisely.
Page.
It's on page 10.
That's right.
Page 6. Line 25. Delete otherwise and insert a percent is. So I would read, unless a lower percent is specified under federal requirements, no more than 5%. Because otherwise could be ambiguous because, as Senator Dill just said, the federal law says 10.
Okay, so your amendment would say unless a lower percent is specified under federal requirements.
Madam Chair, yes.
I think that's a good suggestion. Is there any discussion on Senator Frederickson's motion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, I'm
Senator Vickerman.
Finding here, we got a lot of foreclosed homes in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and maybe outdated. I think it's in here, but I couldn't find it.
Yeah, page 3, I think, of the bill. 3.3. And again, right now, we don't know for sure, but we're asking the Office of Energy Security to apply for a waiver or seek authority, however they have to do it, from the United States Department of Energy to allow, because usually you can't use weatherization dollars to fix up a home if nobody lives in it. And so they'd need a waiver to do this, but we think there's some, and MHFA, someone is here from MHFA, she's nodding, that they helped us with this language to, they think there's a lot of interest in Washington in allowing us to use it for foreclosed homes. So we just need to get that permission.
Well, Madam Chair, my desire is I want to get families back in those homes.
Yes.
If they're going to build a home and, you know, a window's $1,000 a piece. And sometimes when you foreclose, they don't care if they kick the doors in or if the cupboards are gone or what. So I was hoping we could cover that, get them back in their home and get them producing.
Well, that's one of the things. We'll get a report as soon as we find out if we're successful at that. We'll get a report back to the committee because I think that's a really important idea. I know my city is really interested in that, and I'm sure a lot of others are as well. Senator Saxhog.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think it's worthwhile to say a few words about the fact that we're going to be putting a lot of private businesses into business here. Mm-hmm. Anecdotally, there's so much money here that we haven't had, and as you say, it's going to be for efficiency, and that's going to be savings long into the future, but there's a lot of contractors, an awful lot of people that are going to go to work here because of this.
Absolutely true. Yeah, and I'm going to try to take all the information people have given us about how many jobs they think can be created by this. We'll try to put something together before we get to the Senate floor. I mean, there's some speculation, but at least we'll do our best, because some of these numbers really are quantifiable. But it's a lot of jobs, and it's a lot of, you know, in this commercial industrial energy savings plan, that translates into businesses having money to hire people or to keep jobs. And it worked in St. Paul, and we know it can work for so many businesses around the state.
Minnesota manufacturing, too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Senator Shadry.
Ready for amendments?
Sure.
The A-12. These are the two issues that.
No. Yeah, we should do that.
Madam Chair,
excuse me a second, Senator Shadry. Let me. Senator Frederickson.
Madam Chair, I would move adoption of the A-10 amendment.
So let's get that in front of us. Thank you. And let's just adopt Senator Frederickson's motion just to get the amendment in front of us. Oh, as amended. So Senator Frederickson moves the A-10 amendment to Senate File 657. The A-10 amendment as amended. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Senator Shadry.
move the A12. These are the two issues that I discussed with you before the meeting. The one is just it's not a requirement, it's just an inclusion on a list of types of considerations for energy efficiency devices. It would insert just simple consideration of air-to-air heat exchangers. These are basically, just to put it simply, buildings have intake and outtakes, and you in the winter you bring in cold air into your furnace, and then the furnace puts out warm air that has been warmed as part of the air exchange system that a building has. There's a device that is currently being used that has that exchanges that air. So so as the warm air is coming out, it exchanges with the cold air coming in, and it has a great impact on heating costs, in fact, 50% or more. And so I just want to have this type of device considered amongst the mix. It's not a requirement, and it's just basically a reference to that amongst the other things that are listed. And then the second item, and I had council just draft both of these issues in one amendment. This is an amendment that on the window replacements, that given that Minnesota has two window manufacturers in it, that windows under this grant program need to be purchased from Minnesota.
And that's that allows some exceptions if it doesn't work, if it's not reasonable. But yeah, I think that's similar to the language that we've got in the renewable product preference. Is there any discussion on the A12 amendment? All right, hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Are there any other amendments? All right. Would someone care to move the bill?
Madam Chair, I would move the A10 amendment as amended with the spreadsheet incorporated into the bill be adopted, recommend to pass, and referred to the full committee.
Very good. Senator Frederickson always knows just what to say. any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Thank you so much, committee members. I really appreciate this, and we're moving forward. We're going to, members, we have a ton of work to do on our budget now that we're done with this.
We're not done.
The rest of the agenda today, we're going to, as I said, we'll take some public testimony from people who are from out of town, and then maybe we'll defer some of them to next week. I mean, not public testimony on this bill. I should be clear. We have some public testimony. We've already asked for testifiers to comment on the proposed merger of the DNR Ecological Services and Waters Divisions, as well as proposed changes to the EQB. And this is something we've had a lot of discussion about in previous committee hearings. So we're going to bring I know Jeff Broberg is here, and he doesn't live in the cities, and then we'll see if there's others that can't come back, and we'll take their testimony today. And then, members, for those of you who will be around or not around over the next few days, I intend to spend a lot of time over the next few days with staff working on budget ideas. And as soon as you're back in town next week, we will get together to talk about what our budget plan is for the committee and figuring out how to reach that difficult target that we have. Is Mr. Broberg here?
Yeah, no, we got money anyway.
Anyway, where are we here? We're in room 107. Are we still in room 107? Spending my life in this room.
Let's do it.
Okay. Okay, we have the list of testifiers. We're looking for Mr. Broberg. Is there anyone else who really would prefer to testify today who's on the list?
Behind that column?
You're all so accommodating. Thank you.
Chuck, just make sure.
Well, we've got a lot of people here to listen.
Don Arnest is here.
Connor's here. He lives in St. Paul.
Yeah, there is, yes.
Please, come on up. Let's take make you good use of everyone's time. Please. Welcome to the committee. Maybe we'll finish the first group of testifiers today.
First group.
Perfect.
Hello. Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Don Arnasty, and unlike what it says on the agenda, I do work for the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy, but today I'm appearing before you representing Audubon, Minnesota, where I serve as a volunteer board member. So my testimony today is from Audubon, Minnesota. Audubon, Minnesota is concerned about the concept that has been put forward in the Department of Natural Resources to merge Ecological Services and the Division of Waters. We have had and have participated in a number of meetings with senior staff at the Department of Natural Resources to ask them about what their intentions are, what the plans are, and how they intend to further and provide better service and better perform the responsibilities that you, the legislature, have laid before the agency. At this point in time, we're not convinced that the announced merger has been thoroughly thought out. We're not saying we oppose it, we're certainly concerned about supporting it because we don't see the intellectual underpinning and the approach that in this time of very short budgets where you're likely to be cutting things out of necessity, we're very concerned that it may not be the best time to proceed with a reorganization without clear understanding of how this will actually enhance delivery of services to the people of Minnesota and the natural resources. When we ask for things such as organizational charts and understanding of responsibilities in this new merged division, we were given a philosophical discussion, which philosophically we certainly can agree with, the idea that we would do watershed-based ecosystem management. That's a nice concept, but we think that before we go rearranging divisions at the Department of Natural Resources, as they're making adjustments necessarily due to short budgets, perhaps this would not be the best time to sort of develop a reorganization plan on the fly. So Audubon, Minnesota would ask you, members of the committee with primary jurisdiction over this agency, to look long and hard into this and to ask many questions of the agency, and perhaps we would feel more comfortable as one of the very interested organizations. I know, Senators, you're quite familiar with Audubon and the grassroots membership and the local basis of Audubon's involvement. We would ask you to ask the administration and the Department of Natural Resources to slow down and engage their constituency and be clear about exactly what they're proposing to do with everybody so that we can all be comfortable that we're going to actually result in more services and not just perhaps reorganization for reorganization's sake. Thank you very much, and I'd be happy to answer any questions if I could.
Thank you very much, Mr. Arnasty. Are there questions for Mr. Arnasty? Welcome,
right.
Mr. Thorne.
Well, my name is Steve Thorne. I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, where I'm the past president, currently serving on the legislative and the legal committees. But for 12 years, I was the Commissioner of Natural Resources, and under both DFL and Republican administrations, I might add. I was there at the creation for Ecological Services, and the purpose that that organization, which by the way is now larger than the Division of Waters, was created for, was to address the crying need to look at non-game and non-fish, non-angling populations of fish, wildlife, native plants, to get a better handle on what they are, where they are. The big program was the County Biological Survey, which for many, many years the legislature through the Legislative Commission on Minnesota Resources supported very, very well. Still ongoing. Finally, they've got a unit there that is very competent, that has been able to produce a tremendously useful body of knowledge. And now we're talking about merging it into what, in my view, is quite a different organization. The Division of Waters is a wonderful organization, but its functions are primarily in the engineering line in a lot of ways. It does water permits, it enforces dam safety regulations, shoreland rules, it sets ordinary high water levels on lakes and streams, It is not clear to me how these two are going to be put together, and suddenly, almost magically, we're going to have a new unit that is the leader in what they've called ecosystem management. Now, it's certainly we need to manage on a more integrated basis on a watershed level, but it's not clear to me that what's going to happen is we get that rather than we get the traditional focus on issuing permits, which the statutes say you got to do, and resources are limited. Now, I'm not saying this can't work. I'm just saying that we have questions about it, and that we'd like them to justify and explain to us how this will work, and that in fact we'll end up with an organization that is more effective, and we don't lose what's taken 25 years to build up in the Division of Ecological Services. So that's really all I wanted to say about that today.
Thank you, Mr. Thorne. Questions? Welcome, Mr. Broberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Jeff Broberg. I'm a licensed professional geologist. I have some handouts here, if I can pass those out. I'm a licensed professional geologist in Minnesota. I'm president of the Minnesota Trout Association. I serve as a citizen member on the LCCMR. And I'm a registered environmental manager dealing professionally with water and ecological issues routinely in Minnesota. And I want to express my concern as well and perhaps raise and tell a cautionary story about this and to get people to think about where we're going with water management in Minnesota. We have a lot of different people involved in the administration of water. And one of the things in the handouts you'll see is all of the various agencies that recently engaged in the Environmental Quality Board report on water sustainability. And we have very tight silos in Minnesota of water management. We have the Department of Natural Resources that deals with appropriations that only deals with water quantity. And we have the Department of Health that deals with only water quality for potable use, and Department of Agriculture for water groundwater quality, and the list goes on and on. And we're faced here now with the notion of reorganization to help consolidate some of those things, but there's some major concerns in the division of the responsibility. And a lot of this comes from which laws people are wanting to apply. And I copied first the Minnesota Environmental Policy Act as the overarching state policy for dealing with all environmental issues, whether they're appropriation of water or land use or whatever it is. And the next set of things really goes into what the Department of Natural Resources does. And I wanted to point to the middle of page 2, this list of documents here that's highlighted in the middle, and the things that we run into with the priorities for the Division of Waters when we're dealing with water use. They have very strictly prioritized through statute and rule that water use has priorities. Domestic water use, consuming less than 10,000 a day, down to number 6, which is those non-essential water uses. That's where ecology comes in. So we have state statutes that tell the Division of Waters that all of these things are important for drinking water supply or industrial use or agricultural use, but ecology is the bottom. This really comes to the conflict that the Minnesota Trout Association has had with the Division of Waters for many years. We've on average sued the Department of Natural Resources, Division of Waters, on average every 3 years to protect the ecological resources of our trout streams from shoreland abuses and water pumping and the management of the resources the Division of Water is responsible for. In all cases, we prevailed, often on summary judgment, because of the first thing that I handed out, the Environmental Policy Act, the overarching policy that we have to follow. It doesn't come down to the one set of issues and one set of criteria and priorities that the Division of Waters seems inclined to rely on for all of their work. This really comes down to the issue, I think, that Mr. Thorne spoke of. We're dealing of different cultures. We're dealing with, first of all, a culture of law, and I included in the packet the index of all of the statutes and rules that relate to water in Minnesota. They are the responsibility of the Division of Waters. They're responsible for administering, enforcing the whole gamut. You don't find a similar package of laws with ecological services. Endangered species, perhaps, some shoreland regulations, perhaps, but they're not a culture of law. The Division of Waters is a culture of law that's based on an engineering standard. The standards that are taught in engineering school that are those physical principles that you can rely on. Ecological services is dealing with something far more complex that we don't understand the laws of nature as they apply to this. The important thing, I think, came out of the EQB's report recently on moving towards water sustainability and the statement that all water in Minnesota has already been appropriated for ecological use. And any human impact has a difference. Any human impact that we have changes that naturally appropriated water. And I'm a scientist. I'm a geologist. I deal with the law. I deal with ecologists and engineers, and these are very different cultures. It's the difference between dealing with standards and testing a hypothesis. And I think that really goes to the nature of the debate. What we have is, to some degree, the politicization of science. And that's harder to do with engineering standards, but we're constantly faced as an administration of rectifying the difference between this list of priorities and ecological priorities. And it seems like this proposal to fix this is saying, you guys do it. I think you guys have to do it. I think the statutes are the underpinnings for all of this. And the funding is the underpinning of all of this that goes on to the administration. You set the statutes, the administration has to enforce them. You give them the money. I think we need to slow down and make sure that we can accommodate this cultural marriage that's going to occur, or to separate those things that are more distinct, those enforcements and the likes. And I'm not sure just saying we're going to merge these two very different cultures is going to be the end-all and be-all. The fundamental problem we're facing with here is, in Minnesota, water is free. For practical purposes, water is free. The Division of Waters sees it as a tool for growth and development. Ecological Services understands the ecological needs. And I think it's a very serious issue and a very serious concern that's going to take the involvement of a lot of people to resolve this and move towards even better water management in Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Broberg. That was very interesting comments, and I'm going to just play the devil's advocate for a second because the wheels were churning as you were saying that, you know, Waters Division sees it as a tool for management and development, and Ecoservices for, I forget what you said, for
ecological support.
Ecological support. Is there any, how do we, and I think you've identified some of the problems with the current structure. Probably you and I would agree, I'm guessing, that we should look at a balance of both of those priorities, that one, they're both important. And how do you find a way to create that balance if you have the silos? In the ideal world, if you were in charge for a day, how would we do it differently, which, besides just putting them together and saying, find that balance between amongst yourselves?
I think, in my view, it's developing a structure with perhaps parallel boxes that have to have a central decision maker. On the one hand, the Division of Waters has this statute that says there's all of these priorities before ecological service. If you have people over here saying, no, these are important under this set of statute, somebody's going to have to resolve the conflict, and someone's going to have to resolve the tension. That's administratively one of the issues. The second issue is We need those resources in the Division of Waters to do the science that supports that ecology. And we've really, because of budget cuts, shrunk that group of people so that they've become a small group of regulators. They have some great scientists and the ability to do this, the work that is needed to understand that, and that may be more of an eco-services function, the science about our aquifer sustainability. But the permitting and the responsibility for managing that needs a more of a parallel track. And I think just thinking that you're going to put them together with one person in charge may be a difficulty here. Long answer, sir.
Do you have a question? Senator Frederickson.
Madam Chair, Mr. Broberg, the section of Minnesota law to which you referred, the priorities for water use, I think that was developed during a time of drought. At least I remember talking about it in the 1980s. And do you have a suggestion in how we would incorporate ecological uses into this list?
Senator, Madam Chair, you're exactly right that many of the laws that we have for water appropriations are to define and protect priority uses during times of water stress. That's going to be more frequent as we run into water quality issues as well as quantity. I think that there's still, and that has now been used for simply the permitting of this. So this is an area that needs a lot more work, Senator, and I don't have the answers, unfortunately.
Senator Frederickson.
Madam Chair, just reflecting back to that time, I believe the flow in the Mississippi River was getting very low in the 1980s. And as you well know, there were several federal reservoirs, one of which is Leech Lake, another one, Bagosh's. And there was some talk of maybe they would use them for keeping the flow in the Mississippi River, which caused a great outcry from northern Minnesota on the lakes issue, saying, oh, don't take the water out of our lakes.
Right.
So I'm not sure what all the reasons were, but certainly part of it was to protect that lake resource for the tourism it provides if there's fish and other aquatic animals in it.
Senator, Madam Chair, I recall that, and we see more modern analogies with high-volume pumping. We have, an estimate that Ramsey County is using 300% more than their recharge rate for water. And the city of Lakeville is drawing at a rate that could threaten in the future the Vermilion River. So as we grow in population pressures and have higher demands for water use for energy production or watering lawns, the fundamental problem is the water's free, that we don't value it enough for the need to sustain it over a long period of time. And that's the one place where you might be able to fix this and give the Division of Waters the ability to support those functions by the fees they charge for water use.
All right, thank you very much. Mr. Chaplin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'll be very brief, but the Nature Conservancy.
You identify yourself.
Yes, I'm a senior conservation scientist with the Nature Conservancy. Tom Landwehr was scheduled to be here, but I'm taking his place. The Nature Conservancy has been a strong supporter of programs in eco-services for a long time, and in fact, over 20 years ago, we helped establish some of those initial programs. It's important to us because we rely on the products for our own planning purposes in conducting conservation activities here in Minnesota. The information is also going to be critical for statewide planning as we think about how to spend money in the future in the Outdoor Heritage Council and other purposes. So that our primary goal in any merger is a continuation of the strong programs that are currently part of the Ecological Services Division. Now, while we agree with the department that integrated watershed planning and management is an important approach to maintaining healthy functioning landscapes, we don't see necessarily how a merger will necessarily foster both stronger programs in ecological services and the Waters Division. So that I guess what I would urge you is that we would like to work closely with the department and the legislature as this merger process develops and to reach that goal of protecting the state's important ecological resources. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Great. Thank you very much. Are there questions? Okay. Well, thank you very much for some very thoughtful comments, and we'll certainly keep them in mind as we decide how to move forward. So, members, I thank you for your attention, and thank you all for your patience today. And I'm going to apologize to, well, I don't know, Mr. Thorne, are you coming back to testify on the EQB?
Yeah.
Are you all right with that?
I live in the metro. I'm a retired general.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Frederickson.
He used to hang around this committee a lot.
We used to see him
every time we met.
There don't was you miss us? Cohen. Yeah, so come back soon.
Of course.
I appreciate that. I apologize to the three folks we'll get to again in the future next week. Thank you so much for being here. Appreciate it. And members, thanks for all your attention. Meeting's adjourned.
Shorter meeting than I thought we were going to for.
That's the bill. I know, it's improving. I just was talking.
Yes, I got a note. I was going to try to call you.